A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. But you'll have to get steely tough upstairs, and you must be willing to fucking break your gut.
I've no comment to make on anything.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
Joe, you haven't lived in the real world.
What's this about Galway only having one forward?
It's fucking bullshit, isn't it? Yourselves? Sorry.
And it's Tommy Downes, he's carried it right through the heart to Foley. I don't believe it! Foley has scored! The level!
Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of the Hard Shoulder Podcast here on Facebook Live. That's Balls of Ease GAA Podcast. My own name is Gavin Casey, and I'm joined by Mark Farrelly, but slightly more importantly, we're both joined by Dublin football legend Alan Brogan. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm good, lads. Thanks.
Excellent. Firstly, you are here to talk to us about Clean Marine. So, yeah. I mean, talk us through that a little bit, what it's about and how you got involved.
Yeah, well, I suppose that since I started playing for Dublin in 2002, the nutrition side of things got bigger and bigger as the years went on. And I suppose myself, I kind of developed good habits throughout my career and looking after the nutrition side of things, but at the same time I like to keep it simple. Like, you can make these things as complicated as you want, so like plenty of water, good food obviously, and then I was looking for an omega 3 tablet with a multivit in it. Clean Marine for Men provide both of them for me, and like just for simple stuff to help the energy levels, help with the heart, stuff like that, skin, hair, all that sort of stuff. So it's a nice simple, take two a day and that's all I have to do, and my full requirement is met. And look, it's an easy product, available in all local health stores and all local pharmacies, so it's been good for me. And look, as I said, you can make nutrition as difficult as you want or as complicated as you want, but for me I was just looking for something that I could get all my requirements in one. Clean Marine provided that for me.
Would you have found that there's been a big evolution in the amount of attention that's been paid to nutrition over the years compared to when you finished playing, kind of coupled back to when you started? Was there as much emphasis placed on it? And
13 years, I suppose, you'd think like it would have come in somewhere around that point.
Yeah, there's no question. It was back to 2002. Like, there was a focus on gun food and stuff, but I suppose the foods, it was loads of carbohydrates and eat as much carbohydrates as you could, and then it kind of developed into proteins, and proteins is obviously the important thing now to replace muscles after training and stuff. Protein powders became very big, but I think it's kind of tapered off a little bit again. It's settled down a little bit. So I think obviously more and more information becomes available every year for GA players and for all athletes. But I think most athletes at the highest level pretty much have the right advice now, and kind of everyone's on a level par at this stage, I think. But it has, like, there's no question, it has become more and more important every year, and obviously there's different fads come out every year, but like as I said, I just like to try and keep it simple, stay hydrated, have a multivitamin with an omega-3 and plenty of fruit and veg, good food, it's not rocket science.
Would you have tried to keep it simple throughout your career as well, or did you find that the whole nutritional side of things would have been a sort of exacerbated what was already a huge sacrifice in playing intercounty football?
Well, to be honest with you, at the start of my career, I was still living at home, so my mother looked after most of my most of my nutrition needs. In fairness, I remember back in 2002-2003 on Sunday mornings before a champion game, she might be making us a bit of steak, which is probably a bit bizarre now. If you were to eat steak before a match now, lads would be kind of looking at you funny. Yeah. But that's
steak and spuds.
Yeah, steak and spuds. It works for the lads. Yeah.
But, remember the talks before of lads going up to Croke Park and for Ireland quarterfinals and stopping in for a fry on the way up.
Look, whatever works for fellas as well. Obviously, most of the nutrition is done the week of a game or the week before. I think probably the most important is when you're training, post training, the morning after training, to make sure you're replacing it that you've lost in the training session the night before or that evening. But I think it's like a lot of about common sense as well. Hydration is a huge thing I found over the years. When you weren't properly hydrated, that could really affect your performance. And I remember Pat Gilroy and Jim Gavin as well, actually, if we used to do hydration tests, and if you missed the level of hydration, you were sent in from the training session to get yourself hydrated. So it was more of a lesson for guys that you better be hydrated the next time you come rather than anything more serious than that. But I suppose I taught fellas a lesson too: don't come training without being hydrated.
And you probably find that coming down now to club level as well. Like, I know just from at home over the last few years, the education around that, and so people are learning obviously from things like this, where they'll see county players talking about the importance of hydration and nutrition, whatever it is, that everybody's looking for that little extra edge, I suppose.
And yeah, club football's got so serious as well now. Like, it's not quite an inter-county, it's not far off in terms of preparation. And like, the nutrition isn't an easy thing to get right. Hydration is an easy thing to get right. It's just a matter of having your your couple of litres of water every day, bringing the bottle into work with you or whatever. So yeah, look, it's easy. That's one element that probably is easy to guess right. The football side of things is the more difficult part. So I think that the basics for any team trying to operate at any sort of level is make sure your nutrition is right, going into training sessions or going into games.
On that football note, actually, we had Bernard Brogan in last year. You might know him.
I see his name on the table there, yeah.
You might be able to see it on camera.
But Bernard Jr. was in last year, talking to us about how he wasn't, he maintains he's not naturally gifted at football at all.
I don't know about that now.
He said, in comparison, Alan was much more natural from the off. He had legs, pace, power, and he was very accurate. I had to do something a bit different and just practice harder than everyone else and become very sharp in front of goal. It was a bit of a competitive household, I suppose.
You were a natural, so, and he was the manufacturing hammer.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think
he's a short one there.
He's been a little bit modest there as well. We give him a bit more credit than that. But no, to be honest, we weren't that competitive when we were kids. Like, we obviously played a lot together, and I don't remember us competing much against each other. And we've obviously developed a very good kind of relationship on the pitch. Like, I understood where Bernard wanted the ball, and he kind of understood where I was going to kick it without saying anything to each other. Like, and it was, I don't know, call it telepathic or whatever. I wouldn't say it's quite telepathic, but we just knew the type of ball. I knew the type of ball he liked, and he knew where I wanted to kick. And a lot of times we'd manage to pull off passes or pull off scores, and maybe you just wouldn't be able to do with somebody else because you wouldn't have that relationship. And there was a few guys over the years I had that kind of relationship with. Like, I would have had it with J.O. He knew the style of ball I liked to give in. Probably Mossy Quinn as well. We had a very good understanding together. So just with some guys, you develop those kind of relationships, and like, it helps when you're playing together. When, especially in the likes of Croke Park, where maybe you're not able to communicate with somebody as well as you might be in a club game or whatever because of the noise in the ground and stuff.
I remember a couple of years ago speaking with Bernard, and I asked him to pick his, I think it was a Gaelic football five-a-side team, if he had to have a five-a-side team, and he neglected to mention yourself. You actually, I remember, tweeted the article where he had named his team, sort of criticising your non-inclusion or your exclusion from his team. Would you pick Bernard in your team? I mean, we're giving you the opportunity for a little bit of revenge here.
Yeah.
I think you might take the higher ground.
Maybe I was coming towards the end of my career and you thought I mightn't have the legs maybe for the five-a-side. Would I pick Bernard in my five-a-side? I probably would, to be fair. If you needed a score, you know, we get. If he's not going to do the work up and down the field now that you might like him to do, so you might be carrying him a little bit with that regard. But I probably would pick him for his finishing ability. Yeah,
I suppose composure.
Yeah. You mentioned there as well, like, the type of ball you knew, the type of ball that Bernard wanted in. That's probably from your own experience as well, playing corner forward. How did you find that change? I think you were a wing back actually originally, so maybe it wasn't that difficult, but the way your role evolved over the years with Dublin, did you find it was a help to actually have known what it's like to be in there and trying to win that ball?
Yeah, it probably was. Like, I suppose it just kind of evolved naturally. I was playing, I think it was kind of under Pilar Caffrey that I kind of started to play. I was playing 13 at the time, and I kind of started to switch in and out of centre forward. And I suppose when Bernard came along as well, at that stage, I was probably playing inside myself. Conal Keeney would have been getting a lot of the scores for Dublin at that stage, and then Bernard came along and he kind of filled that position as a score getter. So I was able to afford to move out the field a little bit. And to be fair, I think it probably suited me a little bit more out there. There was a bit more space to operate in. I liked the idea of kick pass and stuff. I always thought I was quite an accurate kick passer and would be able to find the guys inside. So yeah, I think it kind of worked for me in the end. Towards the end of my career, obviously, it's a bit more work, a bit more running to be run out there, and I probably suffered a bit in that regard towards the end of my career. But all in all, I was happy enough to play wherever I was asked to play for Dublin on any given day. But I enjoyed the time out in when I was playing centre forward. The goals probably dried up a little bit when I moved out to centre forward. But
did you find that the kick passing dried up a little bit as the game evolved or devolved, depending on which way you look at it?
Yeah, probably a couple of games. Obviously, the game 2011 against the All-Ireland semi-final against Donegal, obviously it was hard to find kick passes that day. And it is team set up so defensively against Dublin now. Probably those opportunities that were there in years gone by to kick pass in aren't there anymore. So, I think I was probably playing for Dublin at the right time. So I was playing.
Probably
now.
It
was more of a running game now. I would have been all right as well. But I like the kick passing, yeah.
Attacking-wise, you're obviously better off as a wing-back now if you're
you get more space. You look at Kieran Kenny last year when he had to go back wing back, and the amount of possessions and the way he controlled games. So Didn't have to mark anyone because all the other teams half forwards were back. I'd like that actually. Yeah.
Free roll from wing
someone
back.
Someone say I didn't do a whole lot of marking when I played wing back anyway. So
false wing back. It's pretty much your team's offensive talisman at the moment. Do you you mentioned Jim Gavin there a minute ago? Actually, you've sort of seen, I suppose, two sides of Jim Gavin because you played alongside him as well.
I played for a year. Yeah, 2002 would have been his last year.
What was he like as a player compared to what he was like as a manager?
Jim was good out of crack. Like he's a bit.
Was.
More, yeah, he's a bit more. he's a bit more serious now than he probably was back then. But he was a tough competitor playing. Like everyone remembers him playing with Dublin. Like he obviously played for a good few years before that. But him and Declan Darcy then got involved with the Dublin Under 21s that year, or in 2003 after they retired, and we won the All Ireland that year. So they were, like, in fairness to them, they were straight into county management or into county training like the year after they retired. Which, when I look at it now, having retired last year, to go straight into managing or training a Dublin Under 21 team takes a serious commitment and a serious desire. So I suppose both of them showed their. Showed their credential at that stage and how much they were dedicated to Dublin football.
There's, I suppose, sorry, go
on. I was going to say, actually, when you mentioned that, we've had a comment in here on Facebook from Mac Colilshon, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who says, will you ever manage Dublin? Would that be something that would interest you?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a big time commitment now. It's a big time commitment now. There's obviously a lot of pressure on the job and... I certainly wouldn't fancy coming after Jim Gavin, that's for sure. My wage will take a little bit of a lull again, but I'm not sure if I'd probably like to be involved in some capacity at some stage, but I'm happy enough now to just to play a bit of club football for the moment and maybe take a few years off after that. But I would like to be involved at some stage, but I'm not sure as a manager, maybe in a trainer or a selector role maybe.
Yeah, I suppose he's kind of a mystery to a lot of us, Jim Gavin, because there's a perception of him out there that as great as he is as a manager, he's a little bit of a closed book. You know, he gives nothing away in interviews and tends to stay away from that side of things, generally speaking. You're probably far enough removed now from the panel, well, I'm hoping, that you might be able to shed some light on what he's like behind the scenes in terms of, like, you can't even imagine Jim Gavin sort of raising his voice, but he must, I presume.
Yeah,
at some point.
He wouldn't, to be fair. He's always very calm. He's quite an approachable guy. He does things his own way, and he's obviously, like, to be in a job like that and to have the success he has, you need to be very single-minded, you need to be very focused, and he's phenomenally committed to the job. Like, the time that goes in terms of, like, you could get a message off Jim 11, 12 at night, or an email or whatever if he was putting stuff out, and I'm sure I know he works into the early hours in the morning on analysis and stuff like that. So to do that job does take a huge amount of sacrifice, both on his behalf and his family's. Like, he's two young kids, maybe 11 years old and 9 years old. He's obviously married, so there's a huge commitment there as well. So to do that job, you really have to be very, very focused. But he's a very approachable guy. He doesn't lose the head. I've never seen him lose the head. I'm sure he gets annoyed and upset underneath, but I think he always portrays a very calm on the outside, because that's the way he wants his teams to play. He wants his teams to be in control at all times. So
I was actually just thinking of that as you mentioned it, because a lot of teams now, you might see it throughout the league and in Championship, where people are trying to come up with a way to beat Dublin. And I think one of the ways, you know, you've got to have that attitude that you're not going to, I suppose, you're going to get in their face and, you know, get in big hits and big tackles and stuff like that. Do you think that actually you could be better off trying to copy what Dublin do in terms of being just so calm and composed and almost methodical in what they do and never panic?
Yeah, I don't think there's too many of the Dublin lads would respond to that sort of stuff now at this stage. I think, like, obviously discipline is a huge area for Jim as well. Like, we haven't seen it. Been a couple of instances over the years, but, like, in general, the team is very well disciplined. Don't give away too many frees and score positions. If they do, they generally sort it out the next day. So I think that's probably one of Jim's strengths, is if Dublin fall down somewhere or he spots an area of weakness, that it's identified and it's fixed very, very quickly and on the training field that week. And look, he's a very good team around him as well in terms of his management team, with Declan Darcy, Jason Sherlock, obviously, and the rest of his backroom team. Obviously, he's a very strong squad of players there. Like, we've seen in the Auburn Cup how Dublin can put out 15 players, completely new 15 players, and still manage to win that competition. And even with the team that's playing in the league now, there's kind of 7 or 8 guys that have played at the top level, won 3 or 4 All-Irelands, aren't even featuring at this stage. So I suppose he has a pool of resources there that's very strong, but he is making the most of it, there's no doubt about that.
Is it his sort of calm demeanour then that rubs off on the players, where we see them in the clutch, if you like, in these tight games towards the end, just completely keeping the head, no panic, even though we were speaking beforehand, before we came on, about how Dublin barely had a pre-season, really. They were sort of going to use the league as a pre-season almost. And then you see them grinding out these results. A couple of draws that could have been wins, but the opposition almost settled for draws in the end because they're like, okay, this is a dangerous team. Dublin never panicked.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is, like the players look after themselves so well now. Like, it's not like 10 or 12 years ago where guys be maybe coming back with a bit of weight on them or after a heavy winter on the drink or whatever. The guys look after themselves all year round now, so they're probably coming back in good shape anyway. Like, I know all the lads, I wasn't that fond of the gym myself, but most of the guys would be in the gym 2 or 3 times a week, whether they were training with Dublin or not, on season or off season, so they're always keeping themselves in shape. Like with teams, watching Tyrone against Dublin a few weeks ago, like, I thought Dublin were there for the taking that night if Tyrone had to come out and attack the last 15 minutes, but I thought Tyrone backed off and kind of were happy to try and defend their lead. We just talk, I wouldn't say they were playing for a draw, but they were certainly happy to defend their lead. And I think when you play like that and invite Dublin onto you like that, they're eventually going to pick some holes in you, especially when they have the likes of Philly McMahon. Like, they have players all over the field that can hurt you right from the corner back position. So I think whenever Dublin are bet, and they will be bet at some stage, it's going to take a team that really, really attacks them and tries to put them on the back foot. Because I think if you invite them onto you, you're going to be found out eventually.
Actually, on that point, Conal Cahill asks, what's the major difference between this kind of invincible team, as he describes it now, that you've noticed, and the teams you would have played under Pillar and Tommy Lyons with? You know, I was wondering as well, it's probably a thing of patience, that maybe that was a building block, and then Jim has come in and built on that, or what did you see that Jim has done?
Yeah, well, I suppose
things?
once you get the first one out of the way, like winning the All-Ireland in 2011 was a huge monkey off our shoulders, or whatever that's saying, monkey off the shoulders, isn't that
off
the same?
Off the back.
And then the second one is always easier. They have, like he has a phenomenally good pool of players at the moment. Like they have players of the calibre of Paul Flynn and Dermot Connolly and these guys right in their prime over the last few years, Philly McMahon, Keane O'Sullivan, even Brian Fenton. It felt like that coming in and making such a difference. Like, we didn't really have anyone over the years, new guys coming through that made that sort of difference for us. So I think they probably have a stronger pool of players at the moment, but like, I think winning the first All-Ireland set the foundation for what was to come afterwards, and like, obviously to do back-to-back All-Ireland is a huge achievement. There's no taking away from that. But I feel if we lost a couple of very important matches around the mid 2000s, the All-Ireland semi-final loss to Mayo. I felt if we'd have got to a final then, that we could have kicked on a little bit more. But like, I lost 4 All-Ireland semi-finals before we won one, so that's kind of where the problem was for us.
That day in 2006, obviously, that was the infamous day when Mayo sort of marched down towards the hill. Did you find that had any psychological effect on you guys?
Like, obviously that was said after, but I think we went 6 up in that game. I think like we were winning, or should we were 7 up with 25 minutes to go. Like, and then like, I think it was more we just got a little bit soft. We thought we were over the line, and we just dropped the guard, and they managed to get back into the game. I think if that happened to this current team, they'd be more experienced. They'd been in that position a couple of times. They just shut a match like that out, whereas we just got a little bit giddy and it came back to bite us in the arse.
Sunday now, obviously a massive game again. I suppose there'd be people in Kerry, like, usually when they're quiet, they're dangerous. Their form has been blotchy, to say the least, in the league so far, but on a one-off, do you reckon Kerry can be that team to come at Dublin and actually attack them and go, I suppose, blow for blow with them, the same way they tried to do in the Championship last year?
Yeah, well, that would be Kerry's DNA. I think O'Leary and Fitzmaurice has probably learned a couple of lessons over the last number of years, so he'll certainly have a plan. He'd be fairly clear in his mind now, I'd imagine, about how he's going to approach beating Dublin. He's obviously suffered a couple of big defeats in the Championship. He's he's got very close to beating Dublin a couple of times. So it'll be interesting to see how he sets up. But it is an important game for them. I think probably more important for Kerry than it is for Dublin to maybe not to win it, but at least to put in a decent performance against Dublin and just so guys know that when it comes to the championship and they do meet Dublin, that they're well capable of competing. I think if Kerry shipped the big defeat down in Tralee, it would do a lot of damage to their confidence. Dublin obviously going into that game, having won however many games, or having lost in however many games, they want to keep that record going. But look, it's a big game for Dublin. The National League has taken on a life of its own, I think, over the last couple of years as well. Some great games. I think Dublin playing in Croke Park has really added to the spice of the National League, and there's been a big build up to this game down in Tralee as well. It's sold out, there's loads of Dubs going down, so I think everyone's looking forward to it.
Is there any county in particular that you'd look at and kind of think that might be the one to stop us? Because I suppose Dublin now have played against some of the teams that you or I might suggest would have been the one to end the streak, and Kerry maybe are the last ones remaining before the
championship. I thought last year Tyrone would have been close. I just thought and I was surprised a couple of weeks ago that they went so defensive when the game was there for the take. And I think if they come out and attack Dublin, they definitely have players in their forward line that can hurt them. They have a couple of great inside forwards, probably not getting as much ball as they should because they're running a lot of the ball through their hands because they're so defensive. But I think if Tyrone open up a little bit, they have a chance. I think if they stay as defensive as they have been playing, I think they're going to struggle to beat a team like Dublin. So I'd be hoping to see a little bit more for them from an offensive point of view come the summertime.
They also kind of that Dublin-esque calmness when in the face of adversity these days. Even though I was unfortunately up in Omagh on Sunday when they were going in, you know, Cavengrin 4 points up, I think it was at half time. You thought, geez, we have this game won, and just throwing about, no panic, just kept to the system, ran the ball, and absolutely annihilated. I think it was 12 points to 1 or something in the second half.
Yeah, they're really good. They're really good footballers. Like that's the forwardship moment I don't think we're seeing from an offensive point of view. I think some of them have more than what we're seeing, obviously because of the way they're playing, and probably their full forward line probably isn't getting as much ball as I would like them. But who am I to say? Well, yes, first.
Exactly. Speaking of Kerry, actually, Donny Mahoney asks in the comments: has Paul Galvin's fashion had massive effects on the Plunkett's dressing room?
Well, I have my skinny chinos on here now. So that. And look, to be honest, we're more interested in him having an effect on our football team than our fashion. The guys are doing all right for fashion. But it looks great to have him. It's been we played a couple of games now and he's starting to find his feet, I think. And I think he's enjoying it. Look, at the same time, like he's coming in, I think Paul's 37, so we can't expect miracles from him either. Like, he's not the same player. He's not maybe the same player he was 10 years ago. But yeah, he's still very handy, and he'll cause problems for anyone on his day. So now we're happy to have him, and he seems to be enjoying it.
It must be a good bit of crack as well, like not just with Galvin, but you always know with these players from different counties when he's come together that there's lots of old stories and just that kind of being able to meet off the pitch where you're not at.
Yeah, no, it is, and I would obviously play against Paul like a number of times and against Kerry over the years, and I would have been friendly enough with him before he came up. So now we're glad to have him, and he is. He's good around the place. Yeah, he's obviously loads of experience, and the lads have started slagging him a little bit about the old fashioned thing now. They're getting to know him a bit better, so we'll have a bit of crack there, all right, as the year goes on. Yeah.
Mark Usher actually asks here, which Meath player did you hate marking the most?
Which Meath player did I hate marking? Probably when I started out, Mark O'Reilly was still playing, and he played for a couple of years, and he would have been a legend at that. Obviously, Darren Fay was still playing as well. So to play against those guys that I would have grown up watching was pretty special. It's interesting to see with Meade now what they'll do with the McInnes gone down there. Like, I'd expected a good win last week against Galway, so I'd expect Meade to come with something this year with the McInnes involved. Obviously, Andy did a great job at Ballyboden over the last number of years, so. And it would be good to see Kildare, obviously, as well. It would be good to see a couple of decent games in Croke Park this summer with somebody really challenging Dublin and Leinster.
Okay. On that note, actually.
This is the big one we've been building up for.
Yeah, we've been building this up. We asked earlier on in the week to name your top three players you've played against. So in particular order, if you want.
I won't name a particular order, but Mark O'Shea from Kerry, who I actually went to college with. And I think Mark probably spent most of his time at corner forward, but he was a brilliant football and corner back. But I think his his style of defence is probably a little bit underrated. Like, everyone associated him with a little bit like Tomas Hearn up the field doing a solo run, but like he was an exceptional defender, and I think his kind of record over the last number of years speaks for itself. Conor Gormley was another one from Tyrone. We played Tyrone a couple of times before we started getting the better of them. We actually started pretty well. I think, you know, in 08 or 07 maybe, started pretty well in a couple of games against Tyrone, and then Mickey Hart had moved Conor Gormley onto me, and that would be the end of that. Thankfully, I did get the better of him in one or two matches after that. I managed to get a few scores, but he was, for a guy that didn't look that quick, he was phenomenally fast off the mark, and a very good reader of the game. Like, he was a great man to get out in front, no matter where the ball was coming from. So he was really, really good. I know he's very highly rated up there as well. And another one that probably isn't a very obvious one was Joe Higgins from Laois. I think he retired about 2008, 2009. But we had a couple of great games against Laois around the mid-2000s, 04. They beat us one year, 04, 05, 06. And Joe Higgins playing cornerback. He was a slight like myself, but he was a really, really tenacious cornerback. And again, a great man for getting out in front. So he was a tough competitor.
That was a great Laois team right now. I suppose, go back to what you're saying in terms of when it would be great to get the likes of Meath and Kildare and Laois back challenging in Leinster. The other thing I noticed was they're all kind of similarish players in terms of, you know, is that what you hated the most of players who were so quick off the mark that they almost defend from in front? Because the Dublin full-back line seemed to do that a lot now, obviously.
Yeah, but that was, I suppose those three guys, I didn't think about that, but those three guys did like, they all like to defend the front, they all like to cut off that space that I like to run into, and they were absolutely quick, that they were able, my game was built around speed off the mark, and when I had a guy that was maybe able to keep up with me or was able to cut me runs off, I started to struggle to get on ball, and I started to drift further out the field, and I think those lads knew when I started to drift further out the field, they knew they were getting the better of me. But look, all three were very tough defenders that really competed at the top of their game.
Any comments before we head off?
Have we got any more? Donny Manning's in again asking, has Alan's diet changed much since he left the intercounty game?
I kind of allow myself an occasional treat now, yeah. Yeah, look, you're kind of, like, I still look after myself, like, yeah. Obviously you kind of build these habits over the years and it just becomes ingrained. Like, when I'm at work or whatever, I just go for water naturally now, or if I'm going for a snack, I generally try a healthy snack, but I do have an old treat. I like an old chipper here and there, like a pizza too. So look, I think it is important to just maintain a level of good nutrition. Like, speaking about the Clean Marine for men, like, I think stuff like that is very important. Keep your omega-3s and your multivitamins, that sort of stuff. As I said, after that, it's common sense, but I do allow myself an old treat now, a little bit more than I used to.
I'm relieved to hear that. Let's wrap it. Our thanks to you, Alan, for joining us. It's been a pleasure for joining us on The Hard Shoulder. Live on Facebook, our thanks as well to Clean Marine for Men. Be sure to check them out. You heard it there from the horse's mouth. Sorry for calling me a horse there.
Sorry.
Actually, someone commented asking if you had any tips or Cheltenham as well. So.
No, you know what? I'm not really into the horse racing. It's one sport that I haven't really gotten into. Actually, I had a Paddy Power account a few years ago, and they opened it. After we won the All-Ireland in 2011, they opened a book on whether I joined Twitter or not. And I joined Twitter. I think Paul Flynn put a few quid on me to join Twitter, and I think they shut my account down after that, so I've never been in it since. So they might open it up for me.
They shut down your betting account?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I only checked it once after that, to be honest with you, but we might get it open again off the back of this.
Jeez, you probably have a few bob in there.
Yeah. It's probably building up interest, yeah. I doubt it.
We'll get some, maybe get some tips from Paul for Cheltenham then. Cheers, Alan. It's been a pleasure. Be sure to check out The Hard Shoulder on SoundCloud and iTunes and the whole lot. Thanks again to Clean Marine for Men, but until next time.